Call the meeting to State Government Finance and Elections Committee to order pursuant to Rule 10.01. And today is February 18, 2021. Representative Bonner, did you get a chance to look at the minutes?
Yes, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the amendments for February 16th.
Representative Bonner moves the minutes for February 16th, 2021. All in favor, say aye.
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 Chair Nelson, we need to take attendance first.
Yeah.
Okay. That's, I forgot that. Anyway, Legislative Assistant, would you please take the attendance?
Chair Nelson?
I'm here.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Present.
Representative Nash?
Present.
Representative Bonner?
Present.
Representative Drazkowski?
Here.
Representative Elkins?
Aye, a present.
Representative Greenman?
Present.
Representative Cleborne?
Present.
Representative Kosnick?
Present.
Representative Mason?
Present.
Representative New Brindley?
Present.
Representative Pulaski?
Pulaski present.
Representative Quam? Representative Quam?
Present.
A quorum is present.
Thank you. Ms. Spreck, again, we'll redo the minutes. Again, Representative Bonner moved the minutes for February 16th. Again, all in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? Ayes have it. The minutes have been approved. Representative Bonner, the first bill on today, the meeting or the agenda today is House File 609. Representative Bonner, if you want to make your motion.
Yes, Mr. Chair. I'd like to move HF 609 to bring it before the committee, and my intent is to move it to the general register.
That's what our plan is. And Representative Bonner, you have an amendment.
I do, Mr. Chair. And if it's all right with you, I'd like to start by moving the A21-19 amendment to get the bill into the shape I'd like it.
Representative Bonner moves the A21 amendment. All in favor of the amendment to put the bill in the order the author wants, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? We have the bill the way you want it. Representative Bonner, please describe your bill.
All right. Mr. Chair, this bill is really primarily a technical corrections bill for Statute 16E, which establishes MINIT or Minnesota IT Services. The bill addresses recommendations made by the Office of the Legislative Auditor. It incorporates recommendations from the Governor's Blue Ribbon Council on IT, of which I am a member, as well as our colleague Representative Nash and Representative Elkins here before the committee today. Also, the Senate author, Senator Curran, is in fact the Senate author for this bill, and it is co-authored by Senator Wicklund, who is also on the BRC. With that, I'll briefly just outline some of the changes. Many of them are quite repetitive, including changing certain words. So I'll just briefly cover the overview, and then we'll go ahead and get to the testifiers. First of all, this does a few critical things. The first is that it changes the legal name of MINIT from the office to a department, consistent with departments that report directly to the executive branch. The new legal name change from Office of Minnesota IT Services to Department of Minnesota Internet Technology Services. It strikes obsolete and outdated language that is outside of the scope of the mission of MINIT. It solidifies the roles and responsibilities of MINIT as the provider of technology services to the executive branch. It makes minor changes to project registration and reporting requirements, which add a more comprehensive, well-rounded view of the full IT project portfolio while adding greater transparency. The last change of note is that the bill would also merge the Blue Ribbon Council into the existing TAC, the current statutory advisory body, setting it as the permanent advisory council for information technology services in the state. With that, I do have with me here today two testifiers, Deputy Commissioner John Eichten for a minute to speak to any specifics of the bill and provided any needed context surrounding the updated language in statute, and Chair King, who heads the Governor's Blue Ribbon Council on IT, or often referred to as the BRC IT. And with that, I'm happy to move to my testifiers and then happy to stand for questions as well.
Thank you. On my list, I've got John Eichten listed first, if you want to identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you to the bill author, Representative Bonner, for carrying this cleanup bill. For the record, my name is John Eichten. I am the Deputy Commissioner for Minnesota IT Services. As the representative said, this bill is a technical statute cleanup bill for Minnesota Statute 16E, Minutes Enabling Statute. It does address recommendations from the OLA's 2018 evaluation report on Minute and the IT Consolidation Initiative. The OLA recommended some cleanup of the statute, removing of outdated sort of contradictory sections or language with that really resulted from the shift to a consolidated IT operating model in 2011. Again, as Representative said, this legislation clarifies Minute's primary responsibility is to the executive branch. We still would have duties, you know, around a leadership role statewide, but in terms of IT service delivery, clarifies, you know, our role is with the executive branch, and in general brings the statute into compliance with current practice. Several sections of 16E are outdated. They contain overly expansive language around what the vision of previous iterations of the agency was going to be. We feel it's appropriate at this time, you know, with the clear charge from the legislature to really sharpen that focus moving forward. The bill does align the legal name of the agency with the name we're known by now, which is Minnesota IT Services, or MINIT. My five-year-old is coming to say hi. I might go off video for a moment just to help her. But what it does not do is change the name that we will continue to operate under, which is Minnesota IT Services, or MINIT for short. So our current name in statute is actually an acronym, which is Office of MN.IT Services. I believe we're the only agency that is an acronym by law. So what this bill would do, similar to the office, similar to MMB, is state that we are the Department of Information, Minnesota Department of Information Technology Services, but that we would continue to be able to operate under our current name of Minnesota IT Services, or MINIT for short. So the bill also, as the representative said, makes clear the permanency of the BRC. If it's not clear, executive order in 2019 subsumed the existing membership of the Technology Advisory Committee, added some additional members from the private sector as well as the public sector, IT leaders. It's really had a significant positive effect on the work of that group and allowed it to bring forth some very positive recommendations. So we want to make that a permanent body. Really appreciate Chair King's support for that and his presence here today. Lastly, the bill does contain some repealers, including mechanisms that are no longer needed as a result of IT consolidation. And those include an ability for MINIT to work with MMB to stop the spend on projects that are not approved or not authorized to move forward. That mechanism is no longer needed now that MINIT is actually the entity doing the project spend. It also removes language that was actually not followed in practice, essentially in the funding bills. Excuse me. And that language actually directed the appropriation of IT project dollars for business systems, unique agency business systems, directly to MINIT. In practice, over the last few biennia, the legislatures continued to appropriate those dollars directly to the agencies, and MINIT charges back for the services. And this repeals that language, makes it clear for unique agency IT systems, those dollars will flow to the agency. MINIT will charge back for the services rendered. So I'm happy to answer any other questions the committee may have. Thank you again, Representative Bonner and Chair Nelson.
I'm impressed with your being able to continue your testimony with your five-year-old there pounding on your shoulder.
This is Mr. Chair. This has been my life now for over the about a year or so. So luckily, I have a Bluetooth headset, and it allows me to do a lot of work while also tending to a three-year-old and a five-year-old girls. So thank you.
The next person on my list is Mr. Rick King. We want to identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Rick King. I'm the chairman of the Blue Ribbon Council on IT, as Representative Bonner mentioned. I am the recently retired CIO, CTO from Thomson Reuters as well. So pleasure to be here and speak on behalf of House File 609. The Blue Ribbon Council itself endorsed in its report that it issued in June the reconstitution of what is referred to in the statute as the Technology Advisory Committee, or TAC, to include the additional CIOs from the public and private sector, which number six, and to include the four ex officio legislative members. Those additions that were contained in the executive order that created the Blue Ribbon Council and then continued it on in an executive order this past year have been extremely effective in improving the types of activities and recommendations that the Blue Ribbon Council was able to make. The having been a TAC member since its institution in 2011, I can speak to the transformation of that organization given the membership. So I'm here to say I'm very hopeful that you will look favorably on this bill, because it does, in fact, provide a lot of good guidance for the state of Minnesota. Our report for the second group that was named by extending the executive order will be done at the end of this month, so it'll be available in the beginning of March. So we'll look forward to having that out. It's been, as I said, very effective. I do want to commend two of the members of this committee, Representative Bonner, Representative Nash, as being very active members of the BRC, and I'll also commend Representative Elkins, another member of the committee who attended all the meetings, even though not an official named member, and participated wholesomely. And then, of course, as a Egan employer, I do my wave to Representative Mason, and hello to Representative Carlson as well. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. King. I see Representative Nash has his hand up. Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you to the author and the testifiers. This is a recommendation from the Blue Ribbon. It's bipartisan in nature and would be beneficial to support. So that's all I had to say.
Thank you, sir. Are there any other questions of the author or the two testifiers?
Mr. Chair, it might be
Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It might be worth one additional clarification that I failed to mention. I should also mention that this bill does have no cost associated with it. And while we didn't go into any depth on the amendment, it should be noted that the amendment actually included a collaboration between the Senate and the House to make sure that the language was precise and on target and that it matched in both. It has also passed through the Technology Committee, Senator Curran's committee in the Senate, and is moving towards state government there.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, ma'am. I mean, I'll represent King. Mr. King, do you have your hand up again? I see
a... No, Mr. Chair, I don't. I apologize if somehow I pressed the wrong button.
Okay. I see a little white hand there anyway. Okay, again, any questions from membership, from the members? Representative Druskowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just wondering, I see the Advisory Council in here, and I know there was a bill before our committee earlier dealing with a commission, I believe it was. Can someone explain to me what the need is to have both an advisory commission with private sector people in it, which I think is a good thing, as well as a legislative commission?
Representative Bonner.
Actually, there aren't two bodies. This essentially codifies the BRC with the TAC, so there will be only one entity advising the state executive branch.
Representative Skowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Bonner, I was referencing another bill that had come before our committee earlier, maybe a couple of weeks ago, dealing with a bicameral commission. I'm wondering if someone can explain that.
Okay, my apologies.
Representative Bonner.
Yes, thank you, Ms. Representative Draskowski. The bill that you're talking about was HF 66, the Legislative Commission on Cybersecurity. We've known in the last few years that there's been a sort of a bright light shine on a lot of cybersecurity issues in state government. And, you know, being that a core function of government is to be able to serve its people and to safeguard those investments, that data, the ability to produce those essential services, we asked to have a commission that specifically targeted cybersecurity. There's many issues around IT, but we felt that that was important enough to protect the taxpayers' investments in technology and infrastructure that we really needed to have a short-term commission to take a deep dive on that specific issue and make sure that we're ensuring that data and those services for all Minnesotans.
Representative Skowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Bonner. I just wonder, though, so we're creating a new, taking a minute and creating a new department in Minnesota government with this bill, bolstering them with people from the private sector. Undoubtedly, they have all kinds of expertise in cybersecurity and other things. Does the department, the newly redefined department in this bill, have the ability to do cybersecurity evaluation, planning, et cetera, or not?
I see Mr. King has his hand up. Mr. King.
Mr. Chair, Representative Duszkowski, all very good questions, I think. From my perspective, the bill that Representative Bonner presented a few weeks ago about the Cyber Commission allows for simply eight legislators to have a closed session and be fully briefed on cyber matters. There is no mechanism in the state government at the present time for such a briefing to take place, and such a briefing would be difficult in a session with ex officio legislators and agency heads and the private sector CIOs. So the view is that while the Blue Ribbon Council, as reconstituted, would have a lot of expertise in terms of cybersecurity and talk about protections and things like that, that the actual briefing about state government activities in cyber would need to be in a different venue, one that could be closed to the public, so that the briefing could be fulsome and complete with knowledge that at the end of that, it would be secured.
So, Representative Skowski.
Thank you, Mr. King, for your concise answer.
Any further questions? Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I also just wanted to clarify one thing. We're not creating a new department. We're actually just changing the legal name to be consistent with a department and every other department that reports to the executive branch, just so we're clear.
So, Representative Bonner, do you want to wrap up and then renew your motion?
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move to refer HF 09 as amended to the General Register.
Representative Bonner renews her motion that House File 609 as amended be referred to the General Register. Ms. Spreck, if you want to take the roll.
Chair Nelson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Carlson?
Aye.
Representative Nash?
Aye.
Representative Bonner?
Aye.
Representative Draskowski?
Aye.
Representative Elkins? Representative Greenman?
Aye.
Representative Cleburne?
Aye.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
Aye.
Representative New Brindley?
Aye.
Representative Pulowski?
Pulowski, aye.
Representative Quam?
Aye.
Representative Elkins? With a vote of 12 ayes and one absent, the motion prevails.
And so the bill's on its way. Thank you, Representative Bonner. The next bill on our agenda is House File 527. And I'll move that we adopt the local government division report for House 527. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
Not. Representative Mason, you want to make a motion on your bill? And we're going to hold this over for possible inclusion.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I would like to move House File 527 before you, and again with the recommendation that it be laid over for possible inclusion.
And I see you have a couple amendments. Do you want to put those, or there's a couple amendments? Are those your amendments or somebody else's amendments?
Okay.
There's an A1-2 and an A2.
I am thinking, and I need to pull those up. I was not planning on putting an amendment on.
Okay, well then Representative Mason, describe your bill and we'll figure out who those are afterwards. Representative Mason.
Okay, thank you. Many of you may be familiar with this particular legislation. It basically, what it does is puts into law that cities can charge for roads for new developments. And this has been very difficult for cities over the past years. I've served on the city council, and coming up with money to do transportation planning, the implementation of roads is a very expensive project. And typically we will charge the developers for anything that impacts that particular development. But we do have some really good testifiers, so I'm going to ask if one of them would like to proceed and give more details.
Okay, members, I have a list of testifiers here, and I'm going to try and go back and forth. So I'm going to start out with Ms. Irene Kao. If you want to identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Irene Gao, and I'm with the League of Minnesota Cities. I wanted to start by thanking Representative Mason for authoring this bill, and Representatives Albright, Elkins, Hansen, and Bierman for serving as co-authors. Now, while this bill most directly benefits growing cities, there's broad support for this legislation. In members' packets, you're going to see a joint letter of support that includes support from Metro Cities, the Municipal Legislative Commission, the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, the Minnesota Association of Small Cities, North Metro Mayors Association, and this legislation is also supported by the Minnesota Association of Townships. The other thing that is in members' packets is that you will see that resolutions to support this bill are vast. You'll see that there have been resolutions, almost 40, that are across the state, from the northwest part of the state down to the southeast, cities that are smaller than 1,000 to our suburbs, and includes townships as well as even a county. Now, as to why this bill is needed, cities for a long time thought that they were doing things right. They thought that when they were charging fees for street improvements in the future, that they had done so correctly. But then there was a Minnesota Supreme Court case, Harsted versus the city of Woodbury, that said the Supreme Court said that there wasn't the statutory authority needed in order to collect this fee. After that case, cities tried again. How can we ensure that we do this fairly? But again, cities got sued. and that means the legislature is in a unique place to be able to fix this problem. This bill provides clarity, not just for cities, but also for builders. Now, local governments face an interesting dilemma. This is the question that I would encourage you to think about as you hear testifiers and consider this bill. When you're thinking about future street improvements, who should pay for it? Should it be the developers who are responsible for new development, or should it be the existing tax base? And the last thing I wanted to do is talk about the bill itself. It was drafted with safeguards in mind. Before, as we were working with stakeholders, we wanted to make sure to address their concerns. And you're going to see in the bill that if the concern is that the money is going to be spent for something else, there's a dedicated account that this money goes into, spent specifically for streets. That only the portion of the development is charged, that they are not charged anything more, but just what their impact is for that future street improvement. There's even a process in there to dispute the fee. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'm happy to take any questions. Thank you for the time.
Thank you, Ms. Gao. I'll hang around for questions. At the end, the next person I'm going to call on is Mr. Nick Erickson from Housing First. Mr. Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Nick Erickson, Director of Research and Regulatory Affairs for Housing First Minnesota. I'm here today in respectful opposition to House File 527. Our state's housing market is in dire straits. We have the worst inventory in the nation. Shamefully, the Twin Cities is home to the highest racial disparities in housing in the entire country. And we have the highest median new home price in the entire Midwest at $430,000. That is $75,000 higher than in Chicago and $90,000 higher than in the Milwaukee region. Frankly, creating a new housing tax amidst all these challenges is unconscionable. There's growing consensus nationally that the rules and processes by which our communities approve new housing developments are exclusionary. This housing tax adds yet another exclusionary roadblock to the process, one that has been as high as $8,000 per home in past uses. This housing tax bill is not about development infrastructure or turn lanes. Homebuyers already cover those in addition to the streets, curbs, gutters, intersections, stoplights, warning sirens, and other transportation improvements. Plus, there's parks, utilities, trails, stormwater ponds, open spaces, and financial security. House File 527 is of, by, and for local governments. It's not surprising that our local government officials are so enthusiastic to get this housing tax authority. House File 527 avoids transparency. There are no hearings. There's no property owner benefits test. Frankly, there is zero accountability in this measure. And let's remember, passing this bill, you're asking your friends and neighbors to prepay a tax and pay for that monthly in their mortgage for the next 30 years. Instead of adding another exclusionary roadblock to our housing process, we ask that you oppose this measure and instead focus your attention and energy on increasing homeownership access and affordability for all Minnesotans. Thank you.
Mr. Erickson. Next person I have is Jason Weedle. And members, I'm going to take questions at the end. So if you everyone, if the testifiers want to stick around, and then we can have answer questions as they come up. Mr. Weedle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and representatives. My name is Jason Weedle, and I'm the city manager for the city of Prior Lake. I would like to thank Representatives Mason, Albright, Elkins, Hansen and Bierman for their authorship on this extremely important bill to restore cities' ability to equitably cover the cost of growth-initiated transportation improvements. Prior to my time at the city, I previously served as the Director of Land Development for a national home builder here in the Twin Cities. In that role, I developed thousands of residential lots throughout 20 different cities in the metro area. In many of those cities, street improvement fees were used to fund related transportation improvements. Prior Lake is a rapidly growing outer ring suburb that has been faced with opportunities and challenges that many of our inner ring neighbors experienced before us. With a current population of approximately 27,000, we are expected to grow to 40,000 residents when we are fully developed. That is a 50% increase from where we are today. For nearly 30 years, our city, like many of our neighboring communities, had been collecting street fees from new developments to cover the cost of road expansions and enhancements that were needed solely to facilitate growth. Over 50% of our existing housing stock has contributed towards street improvement fees. Every 10 years, the city updates our comprehensive plan as required by the Met Council. Included in that plan is the requirement to provide a minimum of 3 housing units per acre. If we do not attain that density of housing, the Met Council will not approve additional connections to their sewer treatment system. The result is that growth is necessary, but we must do it in an orderly and sustainable way. Adding 50% more residents to our city requires more sanitary sewer pipes, more wells to provide water, and the addition of lanes to our roads to accommodate the increased traffic. We have statutory authority to address the cost for sewers and for wells, but surprisingly, we do not have authority for roads. Traffic engineers will tell you that each new home adds 10 vehicle trips per day onto our roadway network. A population of increase of 13,000 residents equates to 43,000 new vehicle trips each and every day on our city streets in Prior Lake when we are fully developed. Our existing roads do not have the capacity to handle this level of additional traffic. House Bill HF 527 spreads the cost of these needed transportation improvements equally across all the developing properties that are driving the need for them. This is not a new concept. It has been used for many years by our neighboring cities as they were developing in the past, but unfortunately, it never received statutory authority and has come to a sudden halt. This puts cities like Prior Lake in a difficult position of trying to identify how do we pay for roadway expansion without placing the undue burden on our existing taxpayers, the majority of which have already paid a street improvement fee that developers passed through to them in the purchase price of their current homes. This bill is about protecting housing affordability for our existing housing stock. In 2020, 24% of the homes sold in Prior Lake met the criteria for being affordable, as defined by the Met Council, which is roughly anything that's $300,000 or less. Without this bill, we will be shifting the cost of road improvements that are only necessary due to growth onto our existing affordable homes, pushing them out of reach to low-income families. Thank you for having me before you this morning, and I look forward to your support on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Waddell. Next person on my list is Ted Kowalski. Mr. Kowalski, please identify yourself for the record and then proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. Thank you all for allowing me to testify before you today. My name is Ted Kowalski, and I've been a home builder in the South Metro for 30 years. I'm a land developer for the past 25 years and continue to do that. I'm a member of Housing First, formerly known as the Builders Association of the Twin Cities. I'm a member of the Realtors Association. I have won numerous Reggie Awards from the Builders Association in the past, and I was honored to win the Builder of the Year Award in 2006 from the Builders Association of the Twin Cities. I am also unique in that I'm a town board supervisor for Spring Lake Township in Scott County. Spring Lake Township is just a little bit south of Prior Lake. We're about 32 square miles, and we have about 4,000 residents. Where Spring Lake Township is unique in the metropolitan areas, we're allowed to develop into permanent rural residential, where we're not going to have sewer and water. The parts of our township that can have sewer and water are held in an orderly annexation area for growth to be annexed into the city of Prior Lake to be serviced. But the majority of our township is such that it will not be serviced by city sewer and water. So we are planned to develop at about one lot for every 4 acres, as opposed to most communities develop 3 to 4 lots per acre. So we have much lower density, and our problem is paying for turn lanes and bypass lanes as our township roads grow and interface with the county roads. Okay. What we're asking for today, what the legislative authority we seek, is so we can charge a fee per lot or per acre on land that is developed to pay for necessary off-site road improvements that are needed because of the growth, similar to the sewer and water access charge that we've been using. In the past, up until the Woodbury-Harstead case, in the past, these fees were paid by the developers of the land. It was working fine. Look at all the growth we have around the metropolitan area. I agree with Mr. Erickson that we need more growth, but look at all the growth that's happening. Pre-Woodbury Hearthstead, the developers were charged this fee. They didn't have, the cities and local units of government didn't have the authority to charge the fee, but the system was working fine. The Woodbury Hearthstead case brought it to everyone's attention that we lack the authority to charge that fee. All we're really here today to do is to ask you to give us the authority to do what we've been doing. This isn't a new tax. This is not a new fee. This really isn't anything controversial. This is how it's been done for the last 40 years. All we're saying is the Supreme Court made it clear to us that we need your authority. We're here asking for that authority. And with that authority, you have oversight. In the past, it's been worked out in backroom deals in the dark closets. Well, now it's all going to be above board and transparent, and it can be audited. So that's why I'm here to support this. Spring Lake Township cannot grow without the ability to make roadway upgrades necessitated by the growth. We cannot simply work it out, as some would suggest. That's not sound policy for this township. That would leave us at too much risk. What happened to the City of Woodbury and Hearthstead case could happen again. And now it's clear with the decision from the Supreme Court that the state legislature has not authorized such fees. We are just looking for you to say that it's okay to keep doing it the way we've been doing it. We're not asking for a real change. This is not a new tax. This is not a new fee. This is how we've been doing it for as long as I've been developing land. We cannot make plans and hope that we can work it out for these future improvements. The idea of having to burden the burden of future roads fall on existing taxpayers is ridiculous. They've already paid, like Mr. Waddell explained, they've already paid their share for road improvements. That would not be equitable. How much we charge per lot or per acre is a simple engineering and math equation. We add up the road improvement costs and divide by the number of lot. In a nutshell, that's how it's been happening. That's what we should keep doing. This is how road improvements up until the Woodbury Hearthstead case have been paid for. Because of that case decision, we are now asking for your approval to keep doing it the way we've been doing it. This is not new. We simply need your authority. Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for allowing me to testify, and I'm happy to field any questions you may have.
Thank you, Mr. Kowalski. The next person I have on my list is Matt Spellman. Mr. Spellman, identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, for the record, my name is Matt Spellman, and I'm the Director of Political Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. Minnesota Realtors is a statewide business trade association with a membership of over 21,000 real estate professionals working with buyers and sellers of all types of property across Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today regarding our opposition to House File 527. Minnesota Realtors' 2021 session agenda included supporting actions that will increase housing affordability and availability and opposing actions that will increase the cost of homeownership. By authorizing a street impact fee that could be applied to new housing developments, we believe House File 527 would increase the cost of housing and reduce affordability, which is why I'm testifying today. Recently, Minnesota Realtors released our annual report on the Minnesota housing market covering 2020. In a year when good news was generally in short supply due to COVID-19, the housing market provided some good news, with closed sales finishing the year up 8.4% over 2019. However, our 2020 annual report shows there are some clear challenges in the areas of affordability and availability. We lack inventory, particularly at the most affordable price points, under $300,000. This poses a significant challenge to getting more Minnesotans into home ownership. The lack of inventory is holding the market back. We have seen a steep decline in inventory for years, and we ended 2020 with only 1.1 month supply, far short of the 4 to 5 months of inventory we need for a healthy market that is well-balanced for buyers and sellers. Our most recent January 2021 report showed that we are down even further to 1 month supply. With a shortage of inventory, both new construction and existing homes, the cost of home ownership will continue to rise, pricing many low to moderate income Minnesotans out of the market. In 2020, the median sales price, $275,000, was up 8.3% over 2019. We encourage the legislature to resist imposing higher costs for new construction, which in turn results in upward pressure on the cost of existing properties. I want to be clear, the rising cost of existing homes is a simple supply and demand issue. If the legislature wants to seriously consider addressing the issues facing Minnesota's housing market, policies like this should not move forward as they only serve to increase the cost of housing. Mr. Chair, thank you for allowing me to share our concerns with House File 527.
Thank you, Mr. Spellman. The last person I have on my list that I've asked to testify is David Wershe. Mr. Wershe, please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. And then we'll go to questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is David Wershe with Wershe Homes, Wershe Real Estate Services, and Wershe Land Development. Up in St. Cloud, also a member, board member, and past president of the Central Minnesota Builders Association. When I first heard about this, I didn't totally understand it. I looked into it a little bit more, and from what I understand, what this is saying is that if we want to develop a piece of land, the city can charge us a fee prior to a final plat even being approved. Aside from a lot of other things on how if this is calculated, and I don't know if I can get a show of hands because I'm not in a room full of people, but, you know, has anyone developed land in a city? Recently, we just finished it in November. We did a small 22-lot cul-de-sac subdivision. We had over $200,000 in fees alone. This is before we even started, and we had 22 lots. So before we even started, we were over $10,000 per lot into this. We then had to put the infrastructure in, streets, curb, gutters, sewer, water, power, gas, everything that goes into building a new development. $1.1 million worth of infrastructure. That's about another $50,000 per lot. And I haven't even purchased the land yet. So if I purchase the land and I add another $35,000 per lot, we're up to $86,000 for one lot in a city, and I haven't paid any interest, I haven't added any profit, and I haven't had any marketing expenses in on this. And we're going to have to continue, and we're going to have to pay taxes on these lots as we hold them as well. And so now we want to add upwards of $8,000 to $10,000 more per lot. So now we're pushing $100,000, and we haven't even completed the development yet and sold anything. If anybody thinks that the homeowner is not going to pay for this and the developer is, they're wrong. All of our expenses when we develop land have to be passed on to the homeowner and the taxpayer, and they're going to pay for that. We're already dealing with material prices that are going up, longer lead times on fixtures, permitting and building fees are continually on the rise, and we're always struggling to combat those as well. Not to mention the idea of affordable housing, because this doesn't help any sort of affordable housing at all. We're dealing with sticker shock when we develop new land, and the consumers have to, you know, get through the sticker shock, and we have to try to convince them that, you know, this is what it costs to develop land now. I think there's some good points that are made on the price of housing going up, and we're the driving force of it. You know, we need to tell the consumer, oh, by the way, I need another $8,000 to $10,000. You know, we don't need another tax or another fee on top of what we're doing. These type of fees are a taxation, and it's going to put small builders and developers out of business and leave it only to the national builders. To come up with $200,000 before we even start a project and before we even have the financing in place, because we don't have a final plat yet, just isn't feasible. If you have a passion for the building homes, it's virtually impossible for a small builder to just go build a home anymore. You need staff and you need a team to do this. the small builders are going to go out of business. So in conclusion, you know, this is a tax. It's not a fee. You know, I heard somebody say that, you know, the longtime resident who's been here for 20 years shouldn't have to pay to upgrade roads. Well, that's what taxes are for, is for road improvement. New developments increase the value of living in a community. They increase the value of everybody's homes in the community. And when the home value increases, so does the tax base that the city's going to get. Therefore, bringing more money to the city for upgrading the roads. So do the existing members of the community benefit from a new development? Absolutely. You know, if we don't want to have to pay for upgrading roads, you know, maybe we just put a moratorium on new development, because what I'm hearing is that without new development, we don't have to upgrade our roads. And I don't think that's true. You know, I have a love and a passion for this development business and custom home building. We continue to work with challenges every day. These fees are costly. These fees are paid for by the homeowner. Homeowners already pay for development. This is going in the wrong direction. So I beg you, please say no to the street impact fee. Thank you for your time, and I'll certainly take any questions.
And I missed one person on my list, Mr. Coyle. If you want to identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony, and then we'll get to questions. Mr. Coyle.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thanks, members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Peter Coyle. I'm a lawyer with Larkin Hoffman. I'm a lawyer lobbyist for Housing First Minnesota, and I've also been a private land use development lawyer for about 30 years. So my comments reflect that experience as well as my work on behalf of Housing First. First of all, let me acknowledge Representative Mason's authorship of this bill. While I strongly oppose the bill, I've known her for more than 20 years, dating back to her service on the City Council in Eagan, and I certainly respect her for her views on it. Let's be really clear. This bill increases the cost of new development anywhere in the state of Minnesota, not only housing, but also any new development relating to grocery stores, nursing homes, shopping centers, industrial facilities, and especially affordable housing. You can't reconcile support for affordable housing and support for this bill, because they are working at cross purposes. The experiences I've had over 30 years, and those of you who have served on city council know this to be true, that when a new subdivision application is brought before a city, one of the primary conditions of approval is that the new developer pay for all of the infrastructure costs that their project requires, whether that be street improvements, utility improvements, curb and gutter, sidewalks, trails, what have you, as Mr. Erickson noted. I've never, in my experience, seen a developer not pay those costs as part of their project approval. So the consequence of this bill is to create yet another cost, a tax, on new development. And that tax will go into a fund that's tied to a plan that can be adopted in about 5 minutes, that will identify future road improvements throughout the city with no time frame, no certainty, no specificity as to the amount of the fee, and no means to get the money back if the dollars are never spent. So it's a tax. We have to be clear about that. And it will drive up the cost not only of housing, but all new development around the state. Cities already have this authority today to impose these costs on new development. They already have these costs today. I just reviewed a development agreement this morning for a client. It includes about a dozen conditions, the primary ones being that the developer pay all of its transportation costs, including offsite costs that are necessary for their project to go forward. So it is incorrect to say that developers are not already paying those costs. And of course, those costs are passed on to the homeowner, who pays that bill. And the reason cities would like to see this new fee slash tax enacted is because it bypasses completely the need to go to the voter for approval to fund other improvements that they'd rather not have to deal with the politics in order to be able to pass it. Secondly, the cities already have in statute special assessment authority. If there's a unique transportation problem that has to be solved, the constitutionally correct way to go about it is to use the special assessment process. It ensures that the amount of the assessment, the tax, which goes on the property tax bill, is proportionate to the actual benefit to the property that's being taxed. This bill would bypass that completely. It will allow for a plan to be adopted, put in the drawer, and allows for the fee to be collected in perpetuity from any new development with no time frame, no specificity, no accountability as to how the dollars are being used. Mr. Chairman and members, I would recommend that you not adopt this bill, although I understand the intent is to lay it over for future inclusion. I think it's bad policy, and I think it goes the wrong way in terms of trying to provide affordability for more people who want to live and own a home in Minnesota. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate your time.
Thank you, Mr. Coyle. I have a list of people on that have questions, and I want to leave time at the end. We have two amendments we need to take up, but I'm going to start with the questions. And Representative New Brindley, you're first on my list.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And thank you, Representative Mason. I just have a couple of questions. Number one, and this could be for Representative Mason, or maybe it's for Ms. Cal. It says that she made a comment that this fee would be for what the individual homeowner's impact is on the future street improvement. And I'm wondering how that is calculated. How's that determined?
Ms. Cowell.
Mr. Chair, Representative New Brindley, I just wanted to clarify that it wasn't the individual homeowner, it's the development. So the development's impact on the future street improvement. And I will defer to more of the subject matter experts in terms of Mr. Waddell or Mr. Kowalski as to how they calculate that fee, because there is actually more of a science and a math that goes into it.
Mr. Kowalski, do you want to add?
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. Thank you for the question. Yeah, in our township, we've developed a plan called a detailed area plan for our township that's going to develop into, you know, 2.5 acre home sites, a net of one lot per 4 acres. Knowing how many lots that whole area develops into, our engineers then designed a road plan with the required turn lanes and bypass lanes where our township roads intersect with county roads, figured out what those are going to cost, and simply divided that by the number of lots that are going to be served by those turn lanes and bypass lanes. Right now, what's happening is the county is saying first guy to the table pays for the whole infrastructure for the turn lane and bypass lane. That can be $300,000-$500,000 depending on the intersection. So it all falls on the first guy to come to the table, the first 40-acre parcel that comes to the table. And then when the 80-acre parcel on the other side of the street comes to the table, the turn lane and bypass lane's already been paid for, so that farmer gets a pass on those fees. What this authority allows us to do is to allocate the cost of those infrastructures evenly across all the people in the area that are going to be serviced by that infrastructure. If we don't have this authority, it actually drives the cost up, because the first farmer, the first 40 acres, has got to bear the whole cost, which does get passed on to the homeowners. So it sets a higher price in the retail market for the lot, because it's carrying all of the infrastructure improvements. Okay, so then when the next guy develops 3 years later, because the roads are all paid for now and he's got a great intersection, he can keep the prices high and just put more money in his pocket because he's not sharing in the cost of the infrastructure improvements. We in Spring Lake Township, we're going to implement this program. We are going to start make a policy to acquire a fee per lot to pay for future turn lanes and bypass lanes. But then the Harstad case came down and made it clear that we don't have the authority to do that. So for us to move forward with policy that flies in the wrong way with what we've been given as the decision, we can't do that. So without the authority to charge this fee proportionately to the people that benefit, it's driving the cost of housing up in Scott County. Now, instead of paying the $300,000 or $400,000 for this turn lane, that developer or farmer says, you know, if I just split this 40 into three lots, I don't got to build a turn lane and bypass lane. and I really need to sell the property because I've been farming this thing for 80 years and picking rocks. My wife has cancer, and I need to sell now. I can't wait for the future. So the unintended consequence of not being able to charge this fee correctly is that we're getting bad development. We're close to the metro area. We're close to 35. We're close to Prior Lake. We got a beautiful 40-acre parcel that butts into a county road, but because we can't afford to pay for the turn lanes and bypass lanes, I'm getting three lots out of that 40 for never to be fixed again. Now roads aren't going to go through it. We're not going to have connectivity. What I said earlier in my response is, this is not new. All we're asking for is the authority to do it the way we've been doing it for 30 years or 40 years. Look at all the growth that's happened. Who do you think's been paying for all this infrastructure? It's the new development. That ain't falling on the existing home.
If you want to wrap up, Mr. Kowalski, we got a lot of questions. But
okay, thank you very much.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then I guess I would ask Representative Mason, based on her bill language then, you know, what happens then if these plans don't come to fruition? What happens with those funds that were collected? And I know that, you know, theoretically it's the developer, but of course those costs are passed on to the homeowners. So what happens with those funds if these plans don't come to fruition?
Representative Mason.
I will just answer from my experience. I mean, we have the funds, and we were very careful not to, as long as you've got some undeveloped land in your community, you need to keep the money there to plan for the future. So, and I guess I'm not sure, and actually when I was on the Eagan City Council, we were considered build out. But if you've watched what's happened in Eagan over the last decade, there's been a lot of development since then. So things are changing. So the bottom line is, as long as you've got the empty land, you need to be able to have the money to pay for it. And I do want to take the time to say, as far as I know, cities are not for-profit entities. Somebody has to pay for the roads. And if you're to end, Mr. Coyle had mentioned the fact that we can go to assessments. I can tell you, doing assessments, it's not a fun activity at all. And plus the fact, in order to avoid lawsuits, the city will normally pick a figure that is like maybe 2,000 or something that you know people are not going to fight, go get hire an attorney to fight. It's not the actual cost. So no matter what, the city is still paying additional funds no matter what happens. So, and if somebody else would like to add to that as well. Does that answer your question?
Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, it sounds like the question was answered by saying that it doesn't matter if those transportation plans don't come to fruition. The money is kept by the city anyway for the purpose of whatever roads they want to use it for. And I think
that's not true.
Mason, let her finish.
Okay.
We can only have one person speaking at a time and go through the chair.
Well,
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess that I would ask for clarification. If the transportation plans that were in place do not come to fruition, what happens with this impact fee?
Representative Mason.
Okay, thank you. I'm going to defer to Ms. Cow on this one, because again, the experiences that I have, there are no city that I know of has been completely built out. So the money still needs to be there till it's built out. But perhaps she would like to elaborate because she deals with more.
Ms. Gao, we have a lot of people. Ms. Gao, we have a lot of questions. If you can be concise.
May I clarify the question, Mr. Chair?
Sure, Representative New Brindley. But first, when we answer questions, I've got a lot of people on the list here that are on. Want to ask? These are complicated matters. But if we can be concise in our questions and concise in our answers, we can get to more questions. Representative New Brindley, if you want to clarify your question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, because perhaps the question wasn't understood properly. But what it sounded like to me when Mr. Kowalski answered was that when they build out these developments, there are specific transportation improvement plans that are put in place, turn lanes, whatever may be necessary to support those developments. My question is, you know, that first stage of the development goes in, what happens if the future plans do not come to fruition? You know, there was that specific transportation plan for those developments. What happens if that doesn't come to fruition? What happens with those fees?
Ms. Gao.
Mr. Chair, Representative Brindley, I appreciate your question. So consistent with what Representative Mason had said is true. If there's undeveloped land, that trigger for that need of that improvement has not yet been met. So you might not need that turn lane by way of your example yet. But I think that what Representative Mason may have been reacting to in your question is it can't be used for any purpose. It still has to be tied to the amount of the fee, and the improvement is tied to the development itself. I hope that clarifies the response.
Representative Brindley, I'll give you one more question, then we're going to move on. Representative Brindley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, that certainly is concerning that that money can just sit there in perpetuity. We know that people don't own homes forever, and so we've got homeowners then paying for future homeowners' road build-out, which is certainly concerning. But my next question then is, Representative Mason, what is the expected cost that this fee will add to a new home?
Representative Mason.
Okay. That would not be part of what the city council has to deal with. I mean, we are responsible for the infrastructure. Those are the issues the developer would have. My question, the way you're, if I'm interpreting your question right, that's a question for the developer.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Brindley.
Yeah, well, maybe if there's, I mean, clearly this is adding, there's a fee. That fee, whatever that fee is, that fee exactly would be added to the cost of a home. And I'm wondering if we can quantify that.
Mr. Kowalski, I see you got your hand up. You're a developer and you're also for the city. So yep. Short, quickly.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In Spring Lake Township, we've calculated it to cost about $5,000 per lot for every lot we develop in our township to pay for the required turn lanes and bypass lanes. We've actually gone so far before the Harstead case that we were willing to bond for the first developer comes to the table. He pays his fee per lot. There's a shortfall. We were willing to bond for it to put those infrastructure improvements in, knowing that we have the authority to collect the rest of it when the other four corners develop. So, Representative Brindley, I understand your question, but these developments, these structures don't not happen. Growth happens. It might take a little longer. Some might happen quicker, but they are going to happen. And if a development pays a fee today, and let's say the improvements maybe don't go in for 7 or 8 years, they're paying less. They're getting a better deal making the contribution today than they will 10 years or 15 years from now. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Next is Representative Claiborne.
Of course it is, Mr. Chair.
The way they came on the list. Representative Claiborne.
Interesting sidebar. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have been texting with my mayor and discussing all of the conversations that we're having here today. And I'm excited to hear so much support for affordable housing. I think that's great. I've written down everyone's name, and I hope to see them testifying in favor of affordable housing. My questions to you are these. Representative Mason, I want to make sure that I'm understanding the bill properly. This bill is permissive language. Is that correct?
Exactly.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you very much. And I want to make sure that the City of Plymouth has a voice in this room today. The City of Plymouth is asking for support for this bill, so I will be supporting the bill, Representative Mason, and signing on to it. And I want to make sure that I'm also understanding the Supreme Court's ruling, and this goes to you, Ms. Cao, it is that the Supreme Court has said, at this time, our communities may not charge these fees. Is that correct?
Representative Mason.
Would you ask?
Ms. Cao.
Mr. Chair, Representative Claiborne, the Minnesota Supreme Court did find that there was not the statutory authority to be able to charge this fee for future street improvements. That's correct.
Representative Claiborne.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to then follow up with the fact that our community, Plymouth, is in support of this legislation because it is a local control issue. They have the right then, if I'm understanding this properly, to determine if the fees are warranted on the different developments that are happening in the community. Ms. Cao, do I have that correct?
Ms. Cao.
Mr. Chair, Representative Claiborne, yes.
Okay, so I would just, thank you, and I'll just be brief. The majority of the homes that are purchased in Plymouth would not fall under the affordable category at this time. And I would like to know if anyone knows how many affordable, what is the percentage of new construction that is classified as affordable in the suburban districts? Does anyone
know? I see Mr. Erickson has his hand up from the realtors. Mr. Erickson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Claiborne. It's very little, sadly. And I will tell you that we have developers and builders saying that if they could build at affordable price points today, they would have more and more buyers lined up around the block. It is this exact housing tax that you and your colleagues are being asked to support today that is making the problem worse. So you will see less affordable housing being built with this housing tax.
I see Mr. Waddell has his name up, hand up, also wants to answer that question. Mr. Waddell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I can't speak for all communities, but I can speak for Prior Lake. And last year in 2020, a little over 20% of the units that were built in Prior Lake would meet the definition of affordability.
Representative Claiborne.
And may I ask how many developers have put in development plans for affordable housing in the suburbs?
I don't see any hands. I'm not sure. I don't know. I guess we don't know the answer to that question.
Okay. Thank you. It is my understanding that most of the affordable housing that is sold is existing housing stock. Is that correct? Maybe Ms. Cao could answer that.
Cao, that'll be your last question. I need to move on. Representative or Ms. Cao.
Mr. Chair, yes, that is true. The best way to address affordable housing is in other conversations in other committees is through things like nationally occurring affordable housing to ensure that affordability still stays in the communities that it is in. While there is some new construction when it comes to affordable housing, often what cities will do is that they will, these are real costs with streets, with water, with sewer, that they will waive those fees. And that is a choice that's made at the local level because they are taking existing tax dollars in order to support those important purposes. But they are still real costs. And so that those decisions should be made at the local level versus having not this authority not happen at all and pushing the cost to all of the taxpayers. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And thank you, Mr. Chair, for indulging my questions.
Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. As many of you know, I'm a former mayor of the city of Waconia and was mayor for 4 years and city council for two. Folks, cities are not necessarily in the business of governing for fun, to the point that Representative Mason made. Governing's hard. It's hard. And we would have meetings that were out in the open. Actually, I drove the effort to make sure that more and more people attended meetings so that they could understand the taxes that were being levied upon them. When we would do a street improvement project, we would have a Chapter 529 hearing and everybody would get a notice. They would get it sent to their home. They'd get an email. And on contentious projects, I would actually go door to door and knock on their door and say, if you have a concern, you should come to this. We had the hearings, and yeah, they weren't fun, but they were transparent. This bill doesn't offer residents any transparency. It's just going to happen. And for anybody who actually thinks that development doesn't pay for roads, they're wrong. When a developer takes a piece of land and works with the city to create that development, it is apportioned on every parcel of land as to what the curb and gutter and road and sewer and all the stuff that goes in the ground will cost. And then that is put into the cost of the lot and the house. So I have a problem with this bill, and I'm vehemently opposed to this bill for a couple of reasons. We've got an affordability problem, and I was driving through on my way to one city council presentation the other night and was driving through the city of Mayer. City of Mayer has a bunch of starter homes, and those starter homes are affordable, but they're not being built anymore. And the reason that they're not being built anymore is because people are having a hard time building them because we add so many different things on top of the cost of building a home. And if we were to do this, this is going to make it even harder. And here's the problem that I have. And I know, Chair, I have limited time because I do want some of my members to get to their questions and we have some amendments. But here's the big deal. And I talked about this with Ms. Gao the other day. This fee that you're going to layer on top of people if this bill becomes law, and God, I hope it doesn't, but somebody could have this fee collected upon them. And Mr. Spellman can attest to the fact that the average duration of a homeowner in the state of Minnesota is 7 to 10 years. Ms. Gao the other day admitted that this fee collection could take longer to implement than the duration of the people who are going to live in those homes. What a farce. How outrageous is that, that you would actually purport to support a motion or a bill that would collect from somebody for something that they will never have any opportunity to drive on based on statistics alone? That is the actual numbers of home living duration when people are buying these homes in Minnesota. You know, I think about my oldest two sons, both out of the house. Both have said, Dad, I might like to come back to Minnesota. One is getting very close to getting married, and we really like her, so that's even better. But they're looking at buying a house. There's no way on God's green earth that they're going to be able to afford a house that's in a $400,000 range based on so many different things that cities are layering into these houses. So what I'm telling you is, this is not necessary. Development pays for itself. We keep hearing that development needs to pay for itself. It does. And we have these hearings, and we have them out in the open. When we want to assess a street improvement, we have the Chapter 529 hearings. And then for the rest of the development, for the rest of the city roads, they are created and paid for in taxes that go on to the levy that we have truth and taxation meetings at the end of every year. This is just a bad idea. I think that this is just making a mistake that really creates a slush fund for cities that won't actually be benefiting people who will be charged for them. You know, Mr. Chair, I wish we had more time, and I know that I have a lot of other members that want to talk about this, but, you know, Representative Mason, I agree with you that those improvement hearings aren't fun. They're not. They're long, and I remember a couple times we went for 5, 6, 7 hours at City Hall, but you know what? That was important because people needed to have a voice in this, and you know, we still haven't heard from Ms. Gao where the money that Representative New Brindley asked, what happens when this doesn't happen and somebody moves out of their home. They've been charged. They're not going to get refunded. And Representative New Brindley had an excellent question that didn't get answered. And the reason it didn't get answered is because there isn't an answer. There is no mechanism to refund. There is no mechanism to give them their money back. And I think that this is just outrageous and is going to stifle homeownership. It's going to stifle growth. And, you know, we have a housing problem. We have some of the worst housing inventory in the country here in Minnesota. This is not going to help, but this is going to hurt it. I wish we had more time, Mr. Chair, but I'm gonna give back the floor to whoever's next. But this is a miserable attempt at creating a slush fund for cities when they don't actually need it. They currently have all the tools that they need to do just this.
The next, I've got two more. The list keeps growing. Next is Kosnick, and then Representative Drazkowski. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I appreciate seeing this bill again from last year, but unfortunately, this bill still has two major issues: accountability for the fees collected, and as we've discussed, affordability. It doesn't improve housing affordability. I know we're short on time, but I wanted to share comments from a constituent of mine because he kind of summed it up. That this bill is not going to help the issues we face in Minnesota with regards to housing affordability, especially with the market we find ourselves in now. There is not enough supply to meet the demand of Minnesotans. With that said, as a member of the housing industry, this constituent is, he has serious concerns about the bill. The House File 527 takes a step backwards in our efforts to increase housing affordability by authorizing street impact taxes and fees, something the legislature has rightly refused to do for more than two decades. 527 creates a new impact fee authority, acting as a tax on new homeowners. Unnecessary creation of the new impact fee creates a new funding mechanism in the form of an impact fee placed on housing development for future undefined costs anticipated by local governments. Local governments have multiple tools to raise revenues to fund infrastructure and they do not need to create a new mechanism. We are in the midst of a housing crisis, and yet another barrier in the form of street impact fees moves us in the wrong direction and further away from our goal of creating greater housing affordability and more inventory across the housing ecosystem. I think a couple of our colleagues made some of the points previously that I wanted to make, including Representative Cleavorn, but I was wondering if maybe or one of the realtors or home builders could share some information with us about the cost of regulation in new homes, and does this new fee and tax on new homeowners, how does that play with helping increase housing affordability?
Mr. Erickson? I will go to Mr. Erickson, then Mr. Kowalski. They're both Mr. Erickson.
I will be as brief as possible, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Representative, it's a great question. As I said earlier, our home prices here in the in Minnesota, the median new home price is about $90,000 higher than in Milwaukee. It is about $75,000 more than Chicago. A lot of that does come down to local regional policies. We have our zoning requirements. There's the fees that we're paying. Essentially, what we're going to be seeing here is we will see homeowners' ability to afford homes reduced by this fee. I have spent countless hours studying the past use of this illicit tax, and I will tell you that it is inconsistent in its application. Funds have been commingled. In fact, the 1997 or 8 ruling by the state Supreme Court chastised my city, the city of Eagan, for commingling the funds of this tax. And we know that those numbers that I said, 75 and 90,000, you're going to see those grow by as much as this tax is putting on. So we will see housing affordability reduced. This is something we can control. And it's important to note that you will be pricing out 3,000 families from the housing market every time you raise the cost of a home by $1,000. So there will be significant people priced out of the housing market because of this.
Mr. Kowalski, you had your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes.
Mr. Chair, he's not a member of the committee. We've got committee questions, and I had a follow-up, please.
I'll get to you, Representative Kosnick, but you asked for developers. He's a developer also. He's in the housing industry. That's why I want him to answer that question also. Representative Mr. Kowalski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First off, this is not new. These fees are being paid all along. We just need the authority to legally charge these fees and to account for them accurately. You didn't give authority, so you haven't had oversight. Now we're this giving the authority will enable you to have oversight over these fees. Affordability goes to supply and demand. If we can't build roads correctly, we're not going to have the supply we need. Low supply, high price. High supply, low price. So all this talk about keeping the prices down and affordability, if you don't let us develop the land correctly and apply these fees equitably, you're going to drive the prices up. This not having the ability to charge this fee fairly increases the cost of housing because it limits supply. It makes it easy for the big national developers to take big chunks of land because they can afford to pay these fees, but it keeps the small developer builder off the table.
Thank you, Mr. Kowalski. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was wondering, there was a statistic that was something, and I was looking for somebody to confirm it. The cost of housing is like 25% just in regulation. Is that the right amount? Maybe Mr. Erickson could share that.
Mr. Erickson and Mr. Waddell asked the question, so we'll ask Mr. Erickson and then Mr. Waddell. And Mr. Representative Kosnick, your mic seems to be breaking, coming in and out. So I don't know what, if you can, yeah, I don't know either because you don't seem to be moving around much. Mr. Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Kosnick, that's a great question. You know, really it is 33% here in Minnesota is the cost of regulation. That tracks above the national average, which the National Home Builders Association says is about a quarter. But again, it's going to vary from project to project, depending on local requirements, zoning requirements, concessions that are made in the development process.
Representative Kosnick, or Mr. Waddell, did you quickly want to answer?
I'm done, Mr. Chair, thank you.
Mr. Waddell, did you want to answer that also then, and then we can move to the next questioner. Mr. Waddell.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. City of Prior Lake, as well as many cities around the metro area, last time this bill was introduced, we prepared one-page sheets that included all of the fees, charges, building permit fees, inspection costs, everything from start to finish, and what those costs were. And it's very consistent across the metro area. It's 4 to 6% of the cost of the home. And Prior Lake is actually less than 4%.
Thank you, Mr. Waddell. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Interesting thing. We have local governments who are breaking the law and have broken the law, haven't listened to the law. I wonder about the League of Minnesota Cities and their direction to those cities. A question for Ms. Gao. We have 853 cities in the state of Minnesota. How many of them were violating the law before the Supreme Court told them to stop?
Ms. Carr.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, before this Minnesota Supreme Court decision, they weren't actually violating the law. It was as a result of the Supreme Court decision that it became clear that there wasn't the statutory authority needed. Previously, there is in the statute words that references streets and the ability to collect fees for it, but it was not specifically laid out, and therefore we're here before you today asking for that authority.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Ms. Gao, if they don't have the authority given to them by the legislature, the only way they can get it, they're breaking the law. And that's what the Supreme Court said. So my question is, how many cities were collecting this tax prior to the Supreme Court telling them to stop?
Ms. Gao, do you have that answer? Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Drazkowski, I don't have a number, but again, it wasn't illegal before the case. In order to figure out what the parameters are, as mentioned previously, we want to make sure that there are safeguards in figuring out how to charge this fee equitably, not just for cities, but also for developers and as development is coming in. And that's why you have the safeguards that are in this bill.
And Representative Drazkowski, we don't need to argue the semantics of legal or illegal.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. And the safeguards I'm interested in are the safeguards for the taxpayers when we have our cities that are acting outside of the law and collecting fees, taxes that they don't have the authority to collect. And we've seen that. I've saw it as chair of the Property Tax Committee, Mr. Chair. Not only this tax, but a variety of others. The cities in this state are becoming very creative in their efforts to extract more and more wealth from people when they already have plenty of taxes that they have the authority to collect. The question I would have, Mr. Chair, is related to this tax itself in the bill on lines 1.7 through 1.10. I don't see any specificity there about how this how the decision is arrived at on setting the tax. The bill doesn't give the municipality direction on how to set the tax. We give them some broad things to think about there. It looks to me, Mr. Chair, municipality, the city can set the tax at whatever they want. If a city says they want to set the tax at $50,000, is there anything in this bill that says they can't?
Ms. Gall.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, actually, if you look at lines 2.3 to 2.6, there is specificity in terms of how you determine the proportion of that fee. In there, it does require that there be an essential nexus to the fee that's proposed, as well as a rough proportionality to the need that's created by the proposed subdivision or development.
Representative Druskowski.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Gao, I really don't still don't see the level of specificity. I understand the nexus part. Also problematic in the bill, this is a terrible bill, Mr. Chair. Problematic in the bill on line 1.12, excuse me, 1.15, the municipality may deny the approval of a subdivision based solely on inadequate transportation system within the municipality. So if I'm a developer and I want to develop and the municipality and the people on the city council don't like my business or my politics or whatever, they can simply say, you know, our transportation system isn't good enough in order for you to build here. You're denied. If you're going to bring this bill forward, that item needs to be fleshed out a little more as well. A poorly written bill and a terrible policy for the taxpayers of Minnesota. They are the people that are getting hosed by this. And I certainly hope that the Supreme Court is bringing some sort of consequences for those cities that broke our law and stole that money from people against the law. I'm curious, Mr. Chair, were those cities told to give the money back? Ms. Gao, do you know that?
Ms. Gao.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I do not believe that. Actually, I'm unsure of the answer. I don't think I can answer that.
Representative Diskowski, quickly. I've got Ms. Representative. Get to the amendments and then the.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have no more questions. I hope the Supreme Court has thought about that. If this was you or I taking this money illegally, we'd be in an orange suit, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Representative Quam, you have a couple of questions, or you the two amendments I believe were yours, Representative Quam.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. That's why I waited to raise my hand towards the end, so I can do the amendments.
Well, do you want to, Representative Quam, quickly then. We've got less than five minutes left here. Representative Quam.
Yes, I understand that. And I guess the more important amendment, the A2 was the one about information and transparency, but I think the more important one, because of all the questions about unused and refunding, I would move that we would adopt to the bill the A1-2 amendment.
Representative Quam moves the A1-2 amendment. Representative Mason, it's your bill. What's your pleasure with the amendment?
I am definitely going to be voting against the amendment. I understand his concern, but in reality, it's not a good amendment.
So members, Representative Quam moves the A1-2 amendment.
Mr. Chair, could you ask
Mr. Chair
to walk through what the amendment does? This was a very abbreviated court conversation and did not go into details.
Representative Quam, quickly walk through the amendment.
Thank you. And a roll call so we don't have to go through the new division process later. This amendment is to set up a period that after 5 years, because the city already was supposed to understand what was needed and work on the infrastructure improvements, that the payments would be dispersed back. It allows for a process which includes to the actual owner now that it's been developed, and would allow the city not to have the cash flow issue so that it could be taken out as credits in future property taxes. And that way it provides a clean system if it wasn't being used to then disperse it back in, not have to take it out of an account, but have it reimbursed as part of a property tax payment. So it was meant to be easy on the city.
It's 10-1, Representative Quam, hurry.
Oh, and also a one-mile radius limit, because if you are doing stuff more than a mile away, there's a large portion of the city that would also be impacted, and then it should be more of a citywide effect.
Ms. Sprick, if you want to take the roll on the amendment.
Chair Nelson?
No.
Vice Chair Carlson?
No.
Representative Nash?
Yes.
Representative Bonner?
No.
Representative Drazkowski?
Aye.
Representative Elkins?
No.
Representative Greenman?
No.
Representative Cleburne?
No.
Representative Kosnick?
Aye.
Representative Mason?
No.
Representative New Brindley?
Yes.
Representative Pulaski?
No.
Representative Quam?
Aye.
Vote of 5 ayes and 8 nays, the motion does not prevail.
And members, with that, we're going to lay this bill over.
Mr. Chair, I believe there was another amendment.
Representative Nash, we're past our time. We're going to lay this bill over for now. If we're going to bring it up later, we can put the other amendments on. But we have to adjourn. So, Representative.
Mr. Chair, is it being laid on the table or laid over for possible inclusion?
If you let me speak, I can say that. It's being laid over for possible inclusion. If we're going to include it, we'll bring it up later on and we'll discuss it more.
Mr. Chair, I would make a motion to lay House File 527 on the table. This has not gone through the full amendment process, and I would ask for input from House Research as to whether we can lay a bill over that hasn't had all the amendments addressed.
Mr. Chair, we can lay this over till we take it up at a later date. And members, with that, we are adjourned.